Now boarding, the official boarding area podcast would like to welcome aboard all listeners. This nonstop service includes interviews, reviews, and insights from our talented crew of bloggers. Episode number 7 is now boarding.
Joining Captain Ed Pizza in the cockpit for today's episode is Stefan Krasowski from the blog Rapid Travel Chai. Make sure those tray tables are stowed, your seats are in the upright position. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the episode.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Now Boarding Podcast, the official boarding area podcast. My name is Ed Pizza, and I'm here with Stefan Krasowski today, who writes the blog Rapid Travel Chai. Stefan and I have known each other for, we were trying to figure this out before we hopped on the air, we think it's been about 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it was probably at one of the frequent travel universities that he and I have participated in over the years. Stefan is one of the most interesting bloggers that I follow because he covers such a myriad of issues. And the thing I most love about his posts are he definitely covers the business side of a number of different things, travel included. And that I'm a businessman at heart, and so I really enjoy reading those snippets. We're in Crystal City, Virginia today. And I'm super happy to have a chance to sit down and catch up with you. Hey, Stefan, how are you?
Excellent. Thank you.
So we want to get folks a better understanding of who you are and why you blog and what your favorite things are. And I think let's get started with the sort of easy softball question of where you got your love of travel.
I studied Chinese in high school in Minneapolis, and my parents are workaholics. One Disney trip when I was 4 years old, and then nothing through high school except visiting my grandparents in New York. So we took our junior year class trip to China, and it was just eye-popping.
Wow.
I'd been studying all these years, and to use it, and the dynamism of the place and the excitement captured me, and I started then. In college, I went to school in Philadelphia, but I spent semesters in Shanghai and Hong Kong, summer in Tokyo, and graduated, and I was off to China to live for the next 8 years, and started traveling first as a student backpacker every province of China, then every country of Asia, and then on the quest to every country in the world. And a lot of people that get those kind of travel addictions, it's usually something like they were a stamp collector as a child or baseball card collector. So we joked with my parents that it was always a risk when a birthday party when I was little, somebody would give me a toy in something I didn't have because suddenly I'd need to have the whole set. There's definitely that collecting interest that has driven me along.
Yeah, you do like to collect countries. I'll give you credit for that. And when you were studying Chinese when you were younger, it's interesting because as a kid, I remember while they did offer some languages, Latin, German, things like that, I don't think they offered Chinese in my school system. So what was it that you think that made you gravitate towards Chinese?
A brother I worship was 9 years older than me and studying, but our school had Chinese because of a dynamic teacher in Minneapolis, Margaret Wong, who created many of the first programs at university, at high school, at middle school level, now kindergarten at my school, around the state of Minnesota, and then around the country. And I just saw her last weekend, in fact, dinner at her house, and my wife says she's the one person that I actually listen to when she says, "Stefan, you need to do this." So she sends me there whenever I need a stern talking to.
That's hilarious. I could definitely see your wife saying that. So where did you go on that first trip to China? What was the destination?
So we had multiple exchange schools, but it was through Beijing, and then Xi'an, famous for the terracotta soldiers, and a sister school where we have exchanges outside of Xi'an that we spent time, and then also had sightseeing the Chongqing, which is a bit like the San Francisco of China. There's no bikes because it's so incredibly hilly and moody and misty, and then the Three Gorges boat tour, which many have heard, and then down through Shanghai and into Hong Kong, and it was just a few weeks before the handover from UK to PR China. And so everything was getting ready. Everything was tense. It was a fascinating time to be in Hong Kong. I think my first official travel souvenir was so brilliant it was ridiculous. It was an empty can that said "Last Breath of Colonial Air," and you truly made money out of nothing. And I love that can.
That's great. That's hilarious. Do you remember who you flew to get over on that first trip?
That was Northwest, and I didn't have a frequent flyer account, and realized afterward that I needed to. I'd been flying unaccompanied since 3 years old to visit my grandparents in New York, and I know the I was just about to turn four or just over when my first totally unaccompanied flight coming back from New York, and it being Minnesota, there was a terrible blizzard, and we were diverted to Fargo. And pre-internet and all that, and my parents had no idea where I was. I was being doted on by flight attendants. Somehow I was the only person that was going back to Minneapolis, so I had an empty flight hours later with my parents totally in a panic, and the punchline of it is some hours then after I finally got home, and this long trip, the Northwest called and said, "Your son is at the airport. Can you please come and collect him?" So that started my solo travel career.
Those were very different times. Was there still a smoking section on the plane back then, or had they already gotten rid of those?
I believe so. The pack of cards for the kid and all that. Yep. But that also was the first time I had walked on a runway, because in Fargo they just had the stairs down to the runway, and
it's believable back then. They actually have a real terminal now. I've been to it. There's a lot of drone tech up in Fargo.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So being from Minnesota, were you sad to see Northwest go away and become part of Delta?
Oh, it was just terrible. Horrible, awful, in frequent flyer terms. Delta, it's a much better experience, and I give them tremendous credit for having an excellent flying experience now. And I think they've gotten a little bit of the strength of Northwest. I mean, right after the merger, it was like a flurry of snow, and they would cancel their whole schedule of flights that. And on the frequent flyer side, I mean, what got me really into frequent flyer stuff was I was in China. I was traveling. I knew very little about this. I was starting to learn a bit about Northwest just because I was so frequently going back and forth. I had my favorite seat in the Northwest Lounge in Tokyo Narita. I knew all the announcements, all of that, but I didn't know about the programs much, and I was searching something and came across Flyer Talk, and it was a thread of a American teaching English in Korea that had figured out that you could essentially have unlimited 24-hour international connections on a Northwest award ticket.
Oh,
and
wow.
He had posted this string of airport codes over nearly a month on a one-way, like 10, he even did an economy, I think. It was like a 10,000-mile ticket. And he's in Siem Reap. He's in Bangkok. It was, and the amount of work he went in to find, because a lot of those flights in that time would have been one per day, and it's always like 24 hours plus 10 minutes.
Right.
And it would break. But he figured out how to do this month of travel on these miles. And I went, oh, my God, I can't believe this. And and soon I was going to Turkmenistan and all these places that out of China, the cash tickets were very expensive, but NWA.com, if they switched it back on now, they wouldn't have all the pretty upsell stuff, but the award booking functionality, I think, would still be the best amongst U.S. airlines, maybe competitive, maybe United is better, but they could book every partner, everything ticketed.
Yeah.
It was incredible, and when I have met Delta people and asked them questions about the merger, they often say, one regret they have is that they turned off the Northwest website. They went Northwest, I guess, as I understood it, was licensed, so there were more royalties to pay. Delta's was in-house built, and there was pride about Atlanta swallowing up things and so the award functionality is to this day still
rough.
It's still rough. It's so deceptive. I mean, for years after the merger, you know, you can book a one-way. They just charge you a round-trip price and don't tell you. So you think about how many millions of miles were wasted by people that just
didn't
realize a deceptive website was doing it. Now they do all kinds of other stuff. And so that Northwest, I mean, it was a sad day to see that site go down. But, you know, that's the... You know, I kept wishing in the antitrust, the way it went, I wish they had come last in line. You know, I had hoped, if things had been different, it still would have been the Continental Micronesia Island Hopper like I did with my Northwest miles and stopped at every one. But, they're a strong company. They've achieved a lot now. Still wish that NWA.com fired up for me.
I know. When did you discover Flyer Talk? Do you remember when?
So that would have been around 2008 or 9.
Yeah, okay.
I think around then. And it was only before that I had seen it a few times, and mm-hmm. I had actually tried to, some people would post questions on China or something and then get really snarky back. So I saw the negative side of Flyer Talk, and I never got all that active and treated it more as a resource. But then it was when I moved back to the U.S. and saw a listing for the First Frequent Traveler University that,
yeah.
that obviously a lot of people on Flyer Talk there and came out and started seeing that there's a community more than just some good people online and some really snarky ones and piecing together what this meant.
Yeah. All right, well, we're going to step away for a quick break, and we'll be right back to talk about how Stefan got started down the road of blogging. We'll be right back on the Now Boarding Podcast. The Now Boarding Podcast is brought to you in part by Norwegian Air. Norwegian is one of the fastest-growing airlines in the world. The low-cost carrier is based in Europe and continues to connect cities that have never been connected before. Their most recent flights include nonstop service from Florida to Rome, Madrid, and Stockholm. They've also launched new service from Montreal to the Caribbean and from the Toronto area to Dublin. With a fleet of brand new 787 and 737 MAX airplanes, they're making the world affordable for thousands of travelers. And we're back on the Now Boarding Podcast with Stefan Krasowski of Rapid Travel Chai. Stefan, when did you start blogging?
I started blogging, it was right after the first Frequent Traveler University in 2011.
Okay.
New York LaGuardia. And I was, as I said, I had just seen a little bit on Flyer Talk, but didn't really piece this all together. Met many of the bloggers at the time or bloggers that were just starting out. 2011-12 is when a lot of the sites, Popular and Boarding Area and others, really started going and taking off the next year. And I left Frequent Traveler University saying, I don't see the frequent traveler part at all in this. This is not what I think of. But this is incredibly useful to the stuff I want to do. And I'll give especially Rick Ingersoll credit, the founder yep. of Frugal Travel Guy, who got many of us into both miles and points and as well as blogging. And he said, you have something very different than all of these people. You know, share it, start blogging. So I was... from a number of years working corporate insurance, but started the blog as a hobby, and I've continued doing that to this day.
Yeah, I remember Rick was one of the ones, I don't know if it's something that he came up with on his own, but he used to have a phrase that drilled home for me, the way to scale miles and points. And he said, you know, if you find a deal that's good enough to do for you, it's good enough for the
whole family. The whole family, yeah. And that's a broad family of extended relatives, pets, variations of your name. But such a generous guy and encouraging. And, yeah, it was the... They invited me, him and a bunch of others invited me to dinner at that first FTU night at a place in Flushing that ironically didn't accept credit cards. And all these people start reaching into their backpacks and pulling out those gold dollar coins at the time, and they're all paying. And finally, the waitress looks at it, and she goes, so many gold money. And I realized what this hobby was like, that these people were trying to unload these coins wherever they could.
And for those that aren't familiar, there was a time in this miles and points game where you could buy gold coins from the mint for face value, and the mint would pay shipping to send them to you. So you essentially were putting them on your credit card and just earning miles for money. Some folks use them, as Stefan likes to point out, for a dinner. I used to use them for tips in Las Vegas and stuff like that when I would go there in business. Others would just have them delivered to their house in multiples of 500, so they might have $10,000 in coins dropped off, and then they would just take them to the bank and redeposit them in their account, pay off their credit card, and lather, rinse, repeat for 3 or 4 years.
There was a retired social worker from Staten Island at that FTU that had over 70 bank accounts to cycle through the volume.
We've definitely known how to scale those things up in this neck of the woods. You've been blogging now for, let's call it, 6 or 7 years. How do you think your blog and your voice have changed over that time?
I've been working to get much more personal, and I think in the beginning I kept more of a distance, and I'll be honest that I've not blogged the way I really want to. That finding a way to spend the time, the hardest thing I think for blogging is to write what, I don't like the term trip reports because in corporate life I've had to write trip reports.
Sure,
so I'll call them travelogues, but I've been to some of the most incredible places in the world on experiences. Miles and points have played a role in many cases, places that very few people will see or events that they could have had a chance to do. And I'm about 5 years behind on putting those in a way that makes sense on the blog. It's much easier to do a newsy kind of thing.
It is.
Working this promotion, working that. But I want to do much more on that and figure out how to get pictures and stories out in a way that's engaging for people and actually gets me writing them. I think on the miles and points where I've differed, I've never been able to keep up with the newsprint. In 2011, it was one post a day was a big deal. And now many sites are 10, 12, 15 posts a day. You know, everything from the daily flatulence on an airplane thing to the new credit card launching. And where I always try to do is write about what I'm actually doing. Because there's many people who are very good at saying what the advertiser mentions or what maybe you could do, but very seldom do they say what I actually do. So I will say, I have this credit card. I applied for it.
Right.
Why did I get it? Why am I using it? And I think that I'd like to see that from a lot more people rather than the more neutral news style. And I always try to communicate that from my perspective.
Yeah, I balance back and forth between those two because I do like to be able to provide news to my readers, but I love the personal side of it. And I think, you know, given your travel, quick aside, how many countries have you visited? Because I know it's a big number.
So of the UN, 193 members. I've been to 190.
Yeah.
One is coming very soon, and then two are proving a little bit difficult for geopolitical events. But I'm much farther along the way than I would have thought I would be at this stage in life.
Yeah, so Stefan's incredibly well-traveled. And, I got a card right around the holidays this year, and you and your wife were... Gosh, refresh my memory. Where were you guys when you sent the card?
You got a Christmas card from Christmas Island,
that's right.
Australia.
Yes.
It and was you, the, you, this you, year, the commemorative stamps for Santa golfing on this island.
Yeah. And you've had some great trips like that. And I would say I would absolutely encourage you. I think one of the things that happens in our, I won't say industry, but in our neck of the woods when it comes to blogging is that folks feel like they can't share certain material if it gets to be over a certain period of time old. And I think for some of the destinations that we visit, you know, maybe a hotel review gets old after a certain period of time, but the experience, the things that we digest, the stories that you can tell about places that our listeners want to go to, those are great things to be able to share. And I think for the most part, they can be made timeless by a good storyteller.
Yeah, and that trip was like the payoff of miles and points for me. It took 4 years of working on Christmas Island. It's the annual red crab migration. Millions of red crabs spawn, storm the beaches, and go up the island. It's tied to the tides, the moon cycle, the rains. So they usually, about a year in advance, Australia Parks will give two to three, even four sets of target dates. And they're always around Thanksgiving and Christmas when they may migrate. And I wasn't going to go across the world to not see these migrate. Yeah. So with my Delta Diamond status, free award redeposits, partner on Virgin Australia, which is the only major non-charter airline that flies to books Christmas Island and nearby Cocos Keeling Islands, over the course of these years, I learned how to book these awards. Everything that can make an award ticket difficult is involved on these routes. There's what you call published fares. There's no published fares from the U.S. to these places. You're breaking tickets. You have partners like Singapore and Etihad that are supposed to be able to book it and cannot. It was incredible education, and the payoff of finally, after these years, timing it right early December last year, getting there, having a 4-day mechanical delay on Cocos Keeling.
Oh, good Lord.
Nearly missing the migration.
You know, yeah.
The territorial governor intervening to get these stranded tourists to this island. We get there on the night of the first day. I see the millions of crabs, film crews. Google Earth was there. I'm now on Google Earth. So you can pull up Christmas Island, Ethel Beach, Australia. You see the millions of crabs and me in a boarding area t-shirt.
I love it.
And seeing it was this just, you know, greater than any business class, first class award, wanting it so much and having it happen. And without the points, I mean, that last minute, by the time you know that's a $3,000 economy ticket to get out there.
And I think that is the message to always carry away to folks, that miles and points can help connect places that would otherwise be out of the price range of pretty much all the folks listening. You know, it's definitely carried me to many of those places, and I would bet the 190 countries that you visited, there are a great number of them that probably wouldn't have been feasible if you didn't have the miles and points to do so.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would be way, way down on that list. In particular, Africa. I think Ethiopian Airlines has the best award availability of any major alliance carrier. I've never not gotten the exact flight I wanted. It's, you know, may not be business for people that have to have business, but they have incredible availability, and I've gotten all over Africa on these flights. I'll say that commuting around Africa, it's so, when they say it's big, I mean, it's big. Addis Ababa to Lagos, Nigeria is a 6-hour flight, and that looks close on the map. So it's a lot of hopping, but yeah, these would be economically and time-wise so prohibitive. I mean, working when I need Friday night departures, Monday morning returns the next week, having the ability to have awards exactly when I need them and the miles to do it has been incredibly important.
Yeah, I agree, and especially, as you say, in Africa where almost nothing is a short hop, if you will, Australia. Europe's a lot easier to get around from a short hop standpoint. There's so many low-cost carriers, but certainly once you get further afield, points and miles play just a huge role. Before we step away for our last break, tell folks, you know, if they're new to your blog, what it is that they can come to you for. You know, what areas do you consider yourself an expert in that you can help with?
So you mentioned I do dabble in several areas, and that's been both as a corporate road warrior, which is where the business interest comes in, as well as wanting to see every country in the world. So one of my key expertises is using miles and points to get where it's far off the standard map. You know, there's a lot of ways to Paris. There's not too many to Tuvalu, and knowing But the difference between what should be possible to what actually is possible, like the Christmas Island I mentioned, that everything on paper turns out to be wrong, but I know the way to do it, and I did it, and in figuring that out. Delta and United, I've both been top-tier elite with them for a number of years, and those are my main programs. I really focus on that. And then the credit cards is the other area. I don't do much of point generation, and now that I work for myself, I don't have that corporate business travel paying for a lot of mileage earning. So I use the credit cards a lot, and particularly the credit card benefits. I use every free night certificate. I use every trip delay coverage. All of these things that a lot of people overlook are tremendously valuable to me being out on the road.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree that especially when you're footing the bill for your own travel, all those benefits really do add up, especially if you're going to try and get to a whopping 190 countries, which I still find just an incredible number. All right, well, we're going to step away for our last break. We'll be right back for some lightning questions, wrap up with Stefan Krasowski from Rapid Travel Chai.
The Now Boarding Podcast is brought to you in part by No Jet Lag. Don't let jet lag get you down. There are flight crews, sports teams, and business executives all around the world that sing the praises of No Jet Lag. No Jet Lag is the leader in jet lag management for the last 25 years. Don't let jet lag spoil your next trip. Visit nojetlag.com to get yours today.
All right, welcome back for our final segment with Stefan Krasowski of Rapid Travel Chai. A few lightning questions to lead us out of here. Let's start with, and gosh, I know it's a really big list for you, but what's one of the coolest destinations you've ever visited?
As an event, it was going to Iwo Jima for the 70th anniversary commemoration of the battle, and it was another one where flexible miles and points paid off. I was on standby till the last minute. It was chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Japanese defense minister, over 40 veterans from the battle. One was 89, the youngest of the group, because he was 16. Mm. He faked a birth certificate to go, and the stipulation was when they say go, which was about a week before, I got to get to Guam and be on there. And if you ever want to show a flight where there actually are friendly United flight attendants, it is the Guam United charter from on to Iwo Jima.
Iwo Jima.
And taking part in that, I mean, that's truly once in a lifetime. And
that
many of these veterans are already no longer with us. 70 was the real chance and seeing these families with them and all of that experience, even though I didn't have a direct personal tie, I'm a history buff. Visiting the World War II sites in the Pacific has been a highlight of my travels, and being part of that day, and it was the miles that the fee to be on the charter was like $1,500.
Right.
But getting to Guam, the miles were just essentially, you know, not valueless, but it was 70,000 miles round trip, and I had them in Delta, and boom, and
yeah.
And there I am, and having that experience. One frequent flyer in the group, he had, after the war, had been a pilot for Delta, and he was, 94,
wow.
And he had flown in his own business and consulting 200,000 miles that year.
Wow.
As a 94-year-old.
Wow. Good Lord.
I thought these people, they talk about greatest generation, but
yeah.
But being with them and seeing that just was unreal. And as destinations, I mean, another that is so extreme, but I wanted to see Tristan da Cunha, the most remote inhabited place on Earth, the British territory in the South Atlantic,
mm-hmm.
and 268 people live there. Fascinating history, and I got on the final Royal Mail Ship St. Helena visit to the island over New Year's. I went 3 weeks on the boat, sailing out of Cape Town and back, and a piece of travel history, meeting the most diverse group of people, from islanders bringing an infant home, the famous scientists, and all these people that are obsessed with this island and the difficulty of landing. It took us 4 days and special extension by the government to give us another try, and in these swells that the lowest were 12 feet, and finally getting on this place. The cutoff was 83 years old. There was an 81-year-old French woman, frail as could be, that made it down the rope ladder, the hard hat, and everything in the swells, and got on that. But wanting something that much, staring, I was so sunburned from staring at that island for 4 days, wanting to land, and finally did, and learning about that, the culture there was spectacular. And there's a few ways that every year or so some visitors get to go, but these incredibly remote places like that, if you ever have a chance, St. Helena nearby and now has commercial flights.
They do.
And I actually flew them back because I didn't have time to take the vessel all the way back. It's really a spectacular thing to visit such a small place and such a tight-knit community, especially if you grow up in, say, the States, in a big city where you don't necessarily know your neighbors.
Yeah, I think, you know, I know I say this frequently both here and on my own Miles to Go podcast. It's just I love that miles and points can bring us these once-in-a-lifetime experiences, and you certainly lived that to a very full extent, you know, trips that you never would have been able to do without the miles and points.
Yeah, and it doesn't need to be all that crazy like these examples. The Faroe Islands, if you loved Iceland, you know, I'll be partisan and say you'll love Faroes even more. And now it has SAS flights, so you can get there on miles and points, where before Atlantic Airways was very expensive in cash. And there's destinations like that all over the world that have opened up, and with the miles, it's much more accessible. Svalbard is a cheap miles ticket and expensive cash ticket, and that's where you can't leave town without a rifle because of the polar bears. And that's incredible.
No, you mentioned Faroe, and you're right. It's one of those places that's been on my list for a while, and I now when I look at it and score it, it seems like it'll be an easier destination for me to position to with the ability to get there via SAS. There's no question that helps open up that playing field for a lot of folks. Let's roll through some of your favorites. And as far as favorite airline is concerned, this can be an airline that exists now or existed before, but what's your favorite airline?
I said I use Delta and United as my frequent flyer programs, but that's not necessarily favorite. My wife loves Korean Air. That's her Zen airline.
Okay.
She likes the very cool, very stylized, very almost aloof service that some don't enjoy. I'll have to say, though, that what really popped into my mind is ANA,
mm-hmm.
which I've not flown all that often, but with Star Gold, even flying in economy, you have access in Tokyo Narita or Tokyo Haneda, and if you're transiting the right time of day in the lounges, they bring out the sushi chefs. Everybody is very well-behaved, very mild-mannered Japanese. The second the announcement goes out, people leap out of the seat, move as quickly as they can properly, and clean it out. And the last few times I've been there, in the lobby of the lounges in Narita, they have the Star Wars arcade game.
Oh, wow.
Original trilogy, and it's very embarrassing as an adult to ask them for a coin to play it, but they'll give you one coin, they'll laugh, they'll giggle, you play, you have to come back to get the next coin.
That's great.
And keep playing and playing. So I love those little touches or things. It doesn't need to be luxurious, but where an airline is indelibly that from that country. I don't really care about like the ME3 carriers where it's luxurious, but it's designed to be sort of bland international luxurious.
Sure.
I much more enjoy one that I feel like Hawaiian Airlines, we were just talking about it FTU today, of you get on, you start checking in, and you know you're going to Hawaii.
Yeah.
And it's a fantastic, yeah. And it gets you in the right mood, and I will always take them to go to Hawaii. You know, it'd even pay more just for that feeling. I would be happy the moment I get to the airport and see them.
Yeah, awesome. What about favorite hotel chain?
Booking.com, I suppose. I like about $35 to $50 the mom and pop ones where mm-hmm. they treat you like their grandson or granddaughter, and are convenient with Wi-Fi and a breakfast in place. I really don't do much with the big hotel programs. Yes, when I was a corporate traveler, we'd have our contracts and stay at those, and they're very convenient for business. And then special occasions with my wife, for instance, she loves Fairmont's, and when in the past before the Accor merger, we could always get those certificates. I will say my one ultra luxury experience was this past March. I went to the Seychelles, Outer Seychelles Islands.
Mm-hmm.
DeRoche Island had been closed, and I was trying to get there because I'm part of a group called Traveler Century Club. So
yep.
It's 327 unique territories in the world. So I've been to 190 of the UN countries. I've been to 300 of those destinations. And so Four Seasons in this incredibly remote place, everything has to be flown in. I mean, even when VIPs fly in from South Africa, they have to charter a plane to fly immigration to this island to check them in the Seychelles.
Wow.
And I got to go there for the grand opening. I had never asked for a press trip, and I've also never received one, and I didn't. I had to pay full fare, but I was there for the opening. The staff were unreal, and I'd never been at a luxury hotel where I felt like the people were thrilled to be there.
Yeah,
they treated you like family, because I often feel like the more luxurious a hotel is, you know, the more snooty they treat you, and the more nickel and diming that happens. So I get into this trap where I'll love a Residence Inn stay,
yeah,
but I'll go nuts at a JW Marriott for one little thing that goes wrong and that. So, but this Four Seasons DeRoche Island, it's a just unreal experience, and that level of luxury and the food they brought in and the welcome gifts for everyone. And I've seen they do it not just for that grand opening, but the way they treat guests. You know, this is now some months later, and they're still doing the same thing. And it really was just spectacular. And they recruited people. Like one of the ladies working there, she had done her prior years in the Seychelles Coast Guard. And so she's been to every island of the dozens in the Seychelles, except one or two that are in the Aldabra Atoll that are these nature reserves and that. So this wealth of knowledge, just person after person, was fantastic.
That's awesome. Yeah, great services. I won't say it's a dying breed, but it is definitely it's definitely out in the wild, and it is definitely more scarce than it was when I first started to travel.
Yeah, and I think great service doesn't need to be snooty.
Doesn't need to be opulent.
I mean,
right.
My wife loves Fairmont Grand Del Mar north of San Diego. We have our last two ever Fairmont certs because Accor has obliterated it.
Yeah.
We're going to stay there, and it's such a spectacular place. It's like you're in an old hacienda-style thing in immaculate condition, but I hate walking to the lobby because you pass their snooty concierge desk of three stiff-looking people that just... You just feel them judging you as you walk by, and they're so diffident and off-putting. I go out the other doors and go around through the front parking lot to the lobby just to not feel like I'm being judged by these people.
That's a great story. So what's your go-to credit card right now? What's the if you're picking a card out of your wallet, what's the card you use most frequently?
It's a pairing, and I like the Citi Prestige and the Citi and AT&T Access more. And I think a lot of us that are really into this have looked at these combos, whether it's Chase, whether it's Amex, whether it's Citi. So the AT&T Access more There's 3X on online purchases. You can do all kinds of things like that. I'm a Costco shopper. I love the way the company operates and treats their employees.
I love Costco.
They accept any credit card on their website, so I buy Costco cash cards, earn my 3X AT&T, and use the cash cards in the store. And pairing that with City Prestige, which has some fantastic transfer partners like Turkish. I mean, people don't realize the value of the Turkish Airlines award chart. We're sitting in D.C. I mean, Saver Award in business to Turkey is 45,000 one way, to Europe 50,000, and low surcharges. And what a spectacular airline. And
oh, they do such a great job. I was so thoroughly impressed with the service on them the first time I flew, and hoped it wasn't a fluke, and it isn't. And while you sometimes have to go a bit out of your way to get to places in Europe just based on the geography of Istanbul, I find myself wanting to try and connect on them to get places at times.
Yeah, and that lounge is spectacular. It's justifiably, it's not just fancy, but it's a full-on Turkish luxury experience. And we'll see what the new airport is like. And people don't realize that on most award charts, Turkey is placed in Europe.
Yep.
So a lot of things are possible. Now, the downside is going there to anywhere in the Middle East often triggers much more expensive awards.
It does.
Especially like United, using them to transit some places can trigger high pricing. But their own award chart is great, and they're a city transfer partner, and some others. So I've been big on the city cards.
Great. All right, last question. One place that's still on your list that you really want to visit?
Of course, Antarctica is out there for a lot of people. And on that Royal Mail ship, St. Helena, we met one of the passengers is the former, what the British call chief executive of the Falklands and South Georgia and South Sandwich Islands. And he showed pictures. And when I do go to Antarctica, I will make sure to go to the South Georgia Islands. This is where Ernest Shackleton, that story played out, and the South Sandwich Islands. It is a major investment. There's, in addition to all the cruise costs, there's huge permits for every day you're in the South Sandwich Islands. But the scenery and wildlife, and many others have echoed that getting actually to Antarctica is very special, and setting foot on the main ice sheet is special, but all these islands around it is where you really see the wildlife. And so I'm really looking at when I will get in a position to be able to take some of those trips and see some of those islands.
Well, I'll tell you, Antarctica has been the most popular answer to that bucket list question for the previous episodes we've done, and no disservice to anybody that's given the answer before, but it's one of the most informed answers I've heard, and I love the purpose behind you saying, when I get to Antarctica. It leaves me with no doubt that you will end up there. I have thoroughly enjoyed sitting down and hearing some answers that I didn't know, even though we've known each other for quite a while. Thanks a ton for being on the Now Boarding podcast with us, and I can't wait to have you on Miles to Go.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Where can folks find you when you're not hanging out with me on the podcast?
So my blog is Rapid Travel Chai. It's on Boarding Area. The Twitter, Facebook, Instagram is all of that. So that's Rapid Travel, Chai. And I also, very separate from Miles and Points, run a Facebook group called Every Passport Stamp, which is about getting to them all, and a very different crowd of travelers. The least popular posts have to do with Miles and Points, and the most popular have to do with something like Antarctica. So it's a great community.
I love it. Well, great. Thanks so much for being here. Folks, we'll see you next week with another episode of the Now Boarding Podcast.